Welcome to the Startup of the Year podcast, where each episode we showcase exciting new companies from around the world. This podcast is produced by Established, creators of the Startup of the Year program. Established is focused on helping organizations with their innovation, startup, and communication strategies.
Welcome back to the Startup of the Year podcast. I'm Frank Gruber, the co-CEO and co-founder of Established, also the co-founder of Established Ventures and the team behind the Startup of the Year community and this very podcast. On this episode of the Startup of the Year podcast, we're going to be joined by a serial entrepreneur, a unicorn investor, a speaker, and an author, Palu Andres. And he's actually going to talk about his new book, Zero Risk Startup, which came out or is coming out in May of 2024. I got a chance to preview it, and it's an excellent book, and I'm looking forward to chatting with him in about 3, 2, 1. All right, let's get going with Palu Andres. Palu, thank you so much for joining today.
It's my pleasure.
All right, so you just wrote this book. It's coming out soon. We got a chance to preview it, and we're excited about it because, you know, we meet a lot of different entrepreneurs out there in our community and out there in the world, and wanted to understand your kind of inspiration to write this book, Zero Risk Startups.
I've been on this entrepreneurial journey since I was 18 years old when I started my first startup. And I've seen throughout the years that a lot of people want to start a business, but they have a lot of they see a lot of risk and a lot of obstacles. Sometimes it's just excuses, but in many other times people really want to start their businesses and they face a lot of challenge. And during the past 15 years, I've been developing a lot of knowledge about this topic of risk. So I decided to write this book, how to help people to mitigate the risk. Because if the risk is the main obstacle for people to start their own businesses, and if we can mitigate it, then the willingness of people to start the business will increase. And that is what motivates me, is to support people to start their own businesses.
That's great. And I loved in the book some of your early startup journey, you know, sharing all those stories is really interesting. You got started really early and really didn't even leverage your degree, which is pretty interesting. You just jumped right in and just started right out of college. So I love that. And I've been doing it ever since. So just so folks know, like, you didn't just end there. You kept going. You've had some really successful companies. Can you talk about like your most successful company and just so people get a little bit of baseline of some of the things you've done?
I think I have several successful companies, and for me, all are very, very important. My first company when I started from my room was selling wooden tubs for flowers from Portugal to UK. For me, I was 18, I didn't know what was a company, what was a lot of terms, and it was a huge challenge. I didn't even go to the university at that moment, so I was just entering. And for me, that was a huge success because I jumped out of my comfort zone. Then later, I, together with several colleagues, we went to the stock market with a company called Novabus. So we listed the company on the 4th of July, 2000. So it's my Independence Day. It's not just the US Independence Day. It's my Independence Day as well, 4th July.
Mm-hmm. And when you say Independence Day, you mean financially independent?
Yeah, financial Independence Day. Yes.
Amazing.
So 4th of July, we did IPO in Euronext. It was 128 times more oversubscribed, so it's
wow.
Very good times. And on the, if you remember, on the 4th July, the market was already coming down, so from the peak, and everyone was telling us wait more 1-2 years, and we decided no, let's do it. And so we listed the company. The company is still listed in the stock market. Big success. And
it's a darn good thing you did, because right after that it started to really dip right after that,
yeah,
that date.
So, then after that it started going much deeper.
Yeah.
And some years after, when I started becoming an angel investor, so I left, I sold all my stock in 2006. So then I started becoming angel investor. One of my big successes is a company called United Resins, where this company, in the first year of operations, startup, we did $27 million of revenues. And wow. That company and all the process was only possible because of a lot of risk mitigation. And I talk about this in my book a lot, about this example, how we managed to get a very profitable company. So it's always been always profitable since the very beginning. And I received the best angel investment in 2012 for that company. And then going a little bit later, then I was a second investor in a unicorn company called Sword Technologies. It's in US, a company related with rehabilitation for physiotherapy at home, so people can do recovery at home. And since then, I've also supported and exited several companies. But I think it would take a lot of time for us to talk about each of the companies.
No, that's a great overview, and it kind of sets the base, because what I wanted to dive back into is the risk mitigation, because I think that's the biggest thing, and it's in the title of your book. Can we talk about, let's say I'm a you know, got these ideas, I want to get it going, but my biggest, you know, basically stopper or blocker is the, maybe it's the financial side of it, or it's the risk. It's like I can't stomach it, right? Let's say, right? And I think that's what you're talking about. So how do you approach that if you meet somebody that's a founder that has this great idea and is just blocked, and they're never going to do it because of this risk that's like sitting right in front of them that they don't know what to do with?
Look, when I have an entrepreneur that tells me, "Oh, I would like to create a company, but I do not have the conditions," then I ask the entrepreneur, "So tell me, what is the problem? So what is blocking you?" And there comes a lot of excuses or a lot of, let's say, risks. And then I say to the person, "Okay, but if I bring you a client with $1 million order for your product, will you quit your job and you start a company tomorrow?" "Tomorrow, I will start a company." So you see, the only thing that it's preventing you to start your company is to get this $1 million order. So why don't you go and look for it? And people usually think about there is only the tangible risk, so money, assets that are in risk. But I've seen and I've witnessed a lot of intangible risks. So reputation, people are afraid that they can fail because they have a successful career in a company, and then, or they are very well known influencers, for instance, and they are afraid if they fail, then their reputation will be completely devastated. And I teach that in the book, how to overcome those risks as well.
Too big to fail, almost. Like they have too much, whether it be, name out there, ego, whatever you want to call it, ethos, whatever, So I think what I liked your approach to that. I think one of the ones that stuck out to me was more or less, don't start a startup, start a test, more or less like a trial. Like we're just gathering data here. And I think that's a really interesting one to get people off the sidelines to almost baby step into potentially doing something, but not putting it out there as much to kind of set them up for, what more or less what could them look like to them failure, right? So I think, can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think, for instance, in the US, there is a study that was a Zapier Commission Harris Poll study, and they surveyed 61% of Americans that had an idea they would like to start their company, but 92% didn't do anything. So can you imagine, it's 50% of the adult population would like to start a business, but they didn't start the business. And that is very overwhelming. And they need people, the entrepreneurs, or the entrepreneurs, let's call like this, if they see that there is not so much risk to them and they can do this step by step, then if there is nothing to lose, then they can try. And I teach a lot of people to mitigate the intangible risk, but mainly the tangible risk. That's where I focus a lot. I think there is one problem in the last years because of social media. And the social media talks about success. So he raised this money. And in Europe, we have a lot of grant addiction. So entrepreneurs that are addicted to grants. So the mindset of the people usually is, I have an idea, but I need either someone to take care of the risks, which is grants, so free money from the government. So I will not do anything until I get money from the government. Or I need to get money from investors. The problem is, because they did not mitigate the risk, when they approach the investors, they are full of risk. There is one study in Europe, which IBAN surveyed more than 600 angel investors. And the question was asked to them, what was the main reason that you declined to invest in a specific deal, the ones that you refuse? And 87% of the cases was because the project had too many risks. 55% was the valuation was too high. It's not about the potential of the business. So in terms of the paper, in paper, the business looks awesome, but in reality, it's full of risks. So this mindset of entrepreneurs that I have an idea, I need someone to take care of the risk, this discouraged them to think in a different way and to bootstrap and to mitigate the risk. And if I manage to help them to overcome this, then they can start their company independently of investors and of grants. Many of them that approach me asking for angel money, because I'm an angel investor, in the end, after talking to me, they say, thank you very much, but we don't need more angels. We will do it by ourselves, because I told them how to do it without needing external money.
That's amazing. That's really fantastic. I mean, you don't hear that often. I mean, we see a lot of companies right now, just about every company I see is out raising right now and still trying because the market hasn't been great for a while. And so to hear that is really refreshing. So you talked about tangible and intangible risk, and I don't know if our audience necessarily knows the difference. So can you just quickly kind of talk about the two different kinds and like how you then would help somebody, you know, mitigate the tangible risks and how you would approach that? What would you do to kind of get to that point of finding that customer and getting that, you know, getting off the sidelines?
So tangible risk is when there is the entrepreneur will need to put money that he can lose, or assets or guarantees that he needs to guarantee the loan from the bank. This is tangible risk. Intangible risk is reputation, is a conflict with a family relative, for instance, or it's if there is a disaster in the company and there is a scandal in the company, the reputation of the entrepreneur. So in terms of this is on the personal side, but then we go to the project side. And then in the project itself, there are basically five risks in any project. Is the market? Is there a market for that product or for that service? How is the competition going to react? Then we have the entrepreneur team risk. Then we have the financial risk. Is the company dependent on one client? Is the company dependent on a loan? Then we have the legal risk. Does the company have the license to operate? And finally, we have the operational risk. Do the entrepreneurs know how to operate a business? If you ask me for this tangible and intangible risk, sometimes if you reduce the tangible risk or the project risk a lot, then the intangible risk is much reduced. Let me give you an example. So someone wants to start a travel agency and goes to the country and understands that he needs to set up the company, he needs to hire five people because he needs to have one person for a specific area, another person with a specific knowledge. So he needs five people, he needs to have software, he needs to have premises, and in the top he needs to guarantee to put some money to have an insurance against some problems in the company. So when the person understands that the person needs $100,000 or more, then the person starts trying to get funds or to get some investors. Another way to do this is to go and talk, for instance, with the existing travel agency and say, hey, I have this idea. I will build this website and I will put that this project is powered by your travel agency. So when I have clients, you invoice the clients, you receive the money. When I deliver the service, then you transfer the money to me. And by the way, you get 15% of the of these revenues. So the travel agency, the existing one, doesn't have anything to lose, so probably will accept. And the entrepreneur can start immediately, starting with the company, with the project, immediately advertising and receiving clients. So if it fails, nothing happened to the entrepreneur. He learned a lot. If he's successful, then he can create his companies, etc. Another way, for instance, when there is equipment to, I helped one entrepreneur. He wanted to buy a boat for $880,000 for touristic boat. And he went to the bank because he had $220,000 on his money. And the bank said, oh, we cannot support you. You need to have 50% of the money. So he came to me and he asked me, can you invest $220,000? And I said, I think you don't need an investor because you know the business. So you need to focus is how to mitigate the risk of the bank. So I told this entrepreneur, can you talk with the manufacturer of the boat to see if the manufacturer of the boat can buy you back the boat in 1 year time if your business fails for 50% of the amount? So he managed to get that. So the manufacturer of the boat said, no problem. We guarantee that if your business fails and you want to sell the boat to us, we will pay you $440,000. So he goes with a letter of this manufacturer of the boat, together with this money, to the bank again, as I suggested. And the bank says, oh, now it's completely different. Now we are going to support you. And they supported the entrepreneur. So it's the same business. It's the mindset is to mitigate the risk of all parties involved, as wow. well as investors.
Yeah, that's great. Those are two great examples. I love those. You know, there's so many businesses that are built on the, you know, the referral based business. I mean, that's a huge, huge opportunity. And there's some huge businesses built on it that a lot of folks don't even realize. And obviously the boat is interesting just because I like boats. But I know some friends that have built businesses around that. And that's a great way to find the next boat that's bigger and that you can't necessarily afford yet. So great examples there. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but I heard it through while you were talking that your approach there was, it's MeFlow, right? You made this like, acronym for kind of your approach and MeFlow is what you talked through a minute ago, which is in the book. So I appreciate you just like, preaching as you go here, as you're going through the book. So I heard it and wanted to call it out. So, all right. So I think that helps a lot. Those are some great things there. You talked about some pitfalls earlier. What's, I guess, in your experience, failure being kind of the biggest, I guess, issue? Is failure the biggest issue or is it money, I guess, is the question? Or is it both?
I tell the people that failing is not a problem.
Yeah.
You should fail fast and cheap. If you fail fast and cheap, there is no problem at all. What is the problem? You just failed, but you learned a lot. I have a friend that tells me that he never fails because he always, when he fails, he considers that he got an MBA on that specific topic. So he sees this as a positive thing. It depends on the people. Some people are afraid. They think that the money is the main obstacle. Other people think that their reputation is the issue. So when the people have problems with reputation, I tell to them, I see there are two routes there for them. One route is to mitigate the project risk so much that if they have clients, if they have orders, the risk for it to go bad is very, very low. So that's one route. The other route that the people can do is to find a co-founder. Mm-hmm. So find a co-founder that can be the face of the project. And if the project fails, the reputation of the influencer, whatever, is not on stake because the influencer will say, oh, I was just supporting the entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are a lot of ways. Yeah, there are a lot of ways to mitigate each of the risks that people have. But it depends person by person. Some is tangible, some is non-tangible risk.
Okay. Let's talk about mental readiness, because I think that's a big part of it. And you see a bigger push lately, especially there's more talk about mental health. It's been around forever. It's just finally coming to the forefront. Let's see, you know, how do you talk to entrepreneurs about being mentally ready to start up?
I think if one entrepreneur has worked in a specific industry and knows the ups and downs, I think he's better prepared than a very fresh entrepreneur that just has an idea. I think if the team is composed of two or three founders, the likelihood of the founder to be affected by the downs is less than if there are three founders, because then they can support each other. I think the preparation to launch a startup is key on this process. And so you need to define what is failure, because if you don't define what is failure, if a client says, no, I'm not interested in your product, and the entrepreneur thinks, oh, this is the biggest failure of the universe, and stops, so he's not prepared. So I think understanding the challenge ahead and understanding when to stop and defining what is failure. For instance, if someone thinks that failure is because three clients said no, then it's bad, but probably you need to say, okay, you're going to talk with 20 clients and one of them will accept. When you talk with 20 clients and 20 said that they are not interested in your product or service, then you can consider a failure. Another thing is I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs that they do things wrongly. For instance, I have mentored an entrepreneur that had a fantastic product, and I could not believe why the entrepreneur was not selling well. So I told the entrepreneur, okay, let me go with you to a sales pitch. And so, because he was talking to so many people, nobody wanted to buy. And I understood what is the problem. So the entrepreneur comes to the client and says, hey, you don't understand anything about the industry. My software will put you out of job. So talking to IT people, you know, so IT directors, yeah. And so super arrogant. And of course, when you say that you are going to take out the job of the person that you are talking to, the person doesn't want to talk to you more and will not hire you. So and the entrepreneurs need also to try to understand what is the failure and get feedback. One of the things that I teach entrepreneurs when on my workshops is try to get feedback from clients. Don't ask if they liked or not the product, because they just say, yes, it's a fantastic product, but don't bother me. Ask them, what would you improve in my product? And what you think is the best feature of my product? Because with these two questions, it's different questions from, do you think my product is great or not? You will get a lot of feedback and you can improve. And you improve every time you speak to new client or to new investor, you learn a lot. And you need to be ready to have a lot of no's until there is a yes.
I honestly think that you could use those for anything, and not just for a client, like anything you're working on, you could probably get use those same questions to get feedback, and it'll, you know, rather than asking somebody, what do you like it? Is it good? You know, like, that's great, great advice for anyone out there, especially entrepreneurs that are building things too. All right. So we talked about, you know, the mental approach. Let's talk about you mentioned mentoring and networking a little bit to support entrepreneurs. You know, what do you see as the role of mentorship and in supporting entrepreneurs that are, you know, adopting your zero risk approach?
I think there is a mentorship industry out there. I would say 90% of the mentors out there have no experience as entrepreneurs. They are there because the government is paying them. And they are pretending that they are supporting entrepreneurs. So I think that the entrepreneurs, when they are mentored, the first thing they need to try to understand is why the mentor is saying something. because probably there is a conflict of interest between the mentor and what he's saying. So for instance, if a mentor says, oh, you need this kind of IT system, probably the mentor is an expert and wants you to hire the mentor to implement this IT system. Mm-hmm. I think mentoring is a very, very positive if it comes from people that have the experience and can give real good insights, and not someone that read some books in the library and is just saying some stuff to the entrepreneurs. Right. I think the entrepreneurs should listen to all the mentors, but try to understand why the mentor is saying something, because this is the key.
So understand the motivation, and then you mentioned finding mentors that have the chops, right? That have done it, been in the entrepreneurial shoes, more or less. So just really do those background kind of looks into those folks to make sure that they're really walking the walk and not just, you know, selling more or less.
Yeah. I've helped a lot of angel networks in Europe and in Africa as well to be established. And it's very interesting when you go to a place that doesn't have angel investing. The first ones to approach saying that they are angel investors are accountants, are lawyers. A lot of lawyers come to say that they are investors, but in reality, they just want to sell their services. So I'm used to this kind of mentors. Another thing I think in a lot of governments, and I'm very critical about the way many governments support entrepreneurship in Europe, because many governments put entrepreneurship as a problem of just money, just throwing money to the system. And I think the governments could mitigate a lot of risk to startups, much more important probably than just mentoring. And for instance, if a government has a test bed where the entrepreneurs can test their technologies, and then they can show the potential clients that the technology works, this is much more important than finding some 10 mentors that the government pays some money, or just putting money into the startups. So I think there is over mentoring in many countries. And I think this should be reduced, and the government should focus on helping to mitigate risk to startups. Give you another example. A lot of governments put millions and billions of money in universities, building labs, and they don't ask anything back from these universities. But when one entrepreneur has a product and needs a statement from the university that the technology works, the university asks a lot of money, and the first money, and the entrepreneur cannot do this. So why the governments don't say to the universities, okay, here is the money for your lab, but per year you need to give 200 technological statements to startups. This is much more important. And with this technological statement, the startups can raise money or can even get money from the bank. This is a different role for the government.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it kind of puts the burden in the wrong place in some cases, right? Because you're asking entrepreneurs for money when they don't have it. That's what they're trying to go out and figure out. But I still, going back to the entrepreneur one more time, and we're going to have to wrap here in a minute. This has been really fascinating and really helpful. I mean, I think anybody that's got an idea, you know, if they can eliminate some of these risks, get it down by finding customers, bootstrapping, doing some of the things you say you said today and are obviously outlined in the book. We don't want to give all the details. They can go get the book, which, well, actually, we should talk about that. When is the book available and where is it available? There, you got a copy. Nice. There it is. Awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be on the 7th May in Amazon and the bookstores across US and across the world. And so people can pre-order now and get it on the 7th May. There is a ebook version and hard cover version as well.
Fantastic. Are you doing audio too? Are you going to have the audio eventually?
Yeah, audio as well.
Excellent. Fantastic. So go check that out.
Audio as well.
You can pre-order now. One of the things I liked in the book is it offered additional resources too. So I want to talk about that and kind of leave on that, because I think anyone that's listening could, you know, maybe they don't know, you know, how ready they are to start a company, you know? So one of the cool things that you mentioned is that you've got some tools on your website. I think it's just yourname.com/tools. So can you talk a little bit more about some of those tools? I think there's a readiness tool and some other things.
Yeah, so I see a lot of entrepreneurs talking to investors without being ready, without understanding the minimal concepts. For instance, I see entrepreneurs accepting higher valuations, but in very, very bad terms, because they think that valuation is everything. So I will make it available after the 7th on my website, mm-hmm. Several tools where, for instance, the entrepreneur can do investment readiness assessment to see if the entrepreneur is ready and understands the basic concepts on talking to investors. And so the entrepreneur will understand if he's really ready or not ready to talk to investors.
That's fantastic. I think it's something that anybody is kind of sitting on the sidelines with an idea, because there are so many, as you mentioned, 50% of people have these ideas and 90-something percent don't actually do it. So like, this could help get some of that percentage up there a little bit, right?
After this podcast, I think this will reduce from 50% to 45%, at least 5% will start their business.
We're chipping away. Yep. So I appreciate that. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we have to go? I know I really appreciate you being here, and I want to just make sure I say that. And I, you know, is there anything else you want to leave our audience with?
I will launch the book in New York City. So if you want to come to my launch event, you can go to startupgrind.com, New York City, and you'll see that you can register for the launch. And I will be having several workshops across US during May. So come to my website and you'll see the dates and the venues.
Okay, can you share with us the best place to find you? Share your website real quick.
Yeah, www.pauloandres.com. Simple.
Perfect. And that's where they can find you as well and connect. Great. Thank you so much, Paulo. I appreciate your time. The book is fantastic. It's going to help a lot of people get their ideas going. And that's what we're all about here at Startup of the Year podcast. So thank you again and best of luck with the launch. Well, that flew by. I really enjoyed that conversation and didn't even get a chance to ask him about his angel investing strategy. I know he's been in angel investing for quite some time and made some really great investments, and we didn't get to chat about it yet this time, so we'll have to do it another time. So I guess we'll do a rain check on that one for next time. We've got lots to discuss. All right, well, that's it for this episode. Hopefully you enjoyed the show today. Thank you so much again for listening. I really appreciate it. And as always, if you have a startup idea and you want to get it going, today is the best day to start, not tomorrow, not the next day. Get it going, get it started. And I encourage you to join our community for access to support, expert advice, and all the resources you need to elevate your startup by simply going to startupofyear.com. And there's an apply button. You can join our community, and we welcome it. We look forward to having you. If you want to go to the short URL, it's just soty.link/apply. Until next time, I'm Frank Gruber. Don't forget to hug your loved ones out there. Make sure that you're doing something that you want to be doing. And as always, have a good day and good luck out there starting up.
Thanks for listening to the Startup of the Year podcast. Be sure to subscribe and we'll be back with another episode soon.